Welcome to Talking Early Years podcast. My name is June O'Sullivan and I host this podcast to talk about all things pedagogy, all things political and all things plain speaking about children. Today I am delighted to have with me a very favourite of mine actually, Dr. Lala Manners, who is an expert, indeed an award-winning expert, in the world of physical development and is very, very passionate about what we do to support really great physical development for our children. So thank you, Lala.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jim.
Thank you. So I guess the first thing that I always ask everybody is, kind of, how did you get into this? What took you on the road to becoming so very interested in children's physical development?
I did a postgraduate teaching degree, and then after that I became very, very interested in movement studies generally. So I did a three-year training here and in Germany, and I specialised in early years movement skills with children. So my background is very much a European movement background. So it's not sports or gymnastics or dance. It's a very particular approach to supporting and enhancing movement skills in young children.
So you know, it's quite fascinating. I've just been doing quite a lot of work on reflecting on different pedagogies across the world and the influences they have on the way we teach and the way we understand. And as you probably are well aware, we're in an interesting time with the review of the early learning goals and our own sort of shift in the way we're also inspected, which, if you were thinking, pedagogy is the national kind of measure of pedagogy and the national kind of assessment of progress tends to be through Offset inspections. Whether people like that or not, that tends to be the way we're collecting some evidence of whether we're successful or not. And it's very fascinating to know, you know, the power of the nation and the history of each place in terms of how it then frames the way it supports its children. When you talk about, you know, going to Germany and just taking a more of a, say, European view, who were the influences here and how, you know, how is that look that might be different to what we do here in the UK?
Well, the place that I went to, it's the Medar College in Coburg, which is just north of Nuremberg, where Victoria's Albert came from.
Oh, right. Well, that's okay then.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. So Medar himself was a great pioneer, and in those days there was a lot of cross-referencing with other people in his field. So there was Dalcroze and Boda and Laban. And these people were hugely influential in their field. There was a lot of cross-fertilisation. They spent a lot of time in each other's colleges. So it was a wonderful sort of breeding ground for ideas. They were very open to ideas. And this was post-Isadora Duncan.
Oh, wow.
So she had broken the bonds of too much form, too much rigidity. So she was, you know, shoes off, free movement, expression and movement, emotion and movement, a great sort of spiritual content. And these people absorbed that. So there was it was a time of a lot of absorption. And if we think of the pedagogues who were, there was, you know, Steiner, and people like that. Yes, there wasn't a sort of divide between disciplines at all.
Put some dates around this for me, roughly.
This is sort of 1930s onwards. So it was a real sort of hotbed of...
Right.
And they all had their different approaches, but they were very open to other ideas.
Okay. Which, of course, is the very, very interesting thing about keeping live pedagogy live, isn't it? It's the idea that you're bringing things to
an
altogether.
And the educationists, like, you know, like as I said, like sort of Steiner and Montessori, Magaluzzi, all these people, they were very open to talking about movement and children's bodies and what did they need, what was the best thing for them. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't this sort of program approach to physical development. You know, if they do this, then this will happen at this time. This is good, this is bad. It wasn't like there was much, much more fluid, and they had a very deep understanding of how movement underpins and supports and informs all areas of learning. You know, this is the basis of children's learning. And I think our obsession now with, you know, reading and writing, we forget that the first 5 years of a child's life are really intensely, intensely physical. This is how they come to understand their emotional lives, their spiritual lives, their communicative lives. It is very deeply important to them. And I think we forget this.
So you surprised then, I mean, just hearing you now, and I've always admired the way you talk about children using their entire bodies to learn. Does it surprise you then that this conversation isn't a stronger conversation, a more public conversation, given the anxiety about things such as children sitting down too much, indoors too much, you know, the obesity crisis we have, and all the various other things, that there isn't a much bigger narrative around the physicality of learning?
I think that's it. It's the physicality of learning that has been lost. And physical development, physical activity has become an issue to be addressed. So hence, you know, we have physical activity guidelines. They should be doing X amount daily. And it's like, well, okay, but is this going to work?
Yes.
It's difficult because it's a health issue, but actually for children it's not a health issue, it's more about who they are, and that is a much more difficult concept, I think, for the powers that be to get their heads around.
Yes.
If it was just a health issue and they could organise that, then they'd probably take it more seriously.
You're just painting for me the picture of the quiet child who's kind of all twisted up in his own body because he's shy and awkward, and that you can, it sort of tells a story before they even open their mouths. Yeah. And stuff.
Yes.
Are they the child who doesn't want to do stuff, just wants to watch and wait, and there's a whole sort of anxiety, isn't there, about, you know, if you don't involve them, engage them and draw them on, then somehow or other they're going to be traumatized by the fact that they're, you know, the last one to be picked. I tell you, I was always the last one to be picked for camogie because I was terrified of the thing, and if I could get away from it, I would run a mile. But if I had been enabled to just roll on the ground and just feel my own body and just experience the wind in my hair and just kind of figure out how you can stretch and twist and turn without being sort of it being focused into a, say, sporting,
yeah,
sort of framework,
oh,
I probably,
yeah,
would be better of who I am now.
Yeah, I think it's a very, and I think one of the difficulties for practitioners is that it takes quite a lot of confidence and courage to let children be. And if you think one of the most difficult things for children physically to do is to be still, is to sit still or stand still, now that, in for many teachers, is that they're doing nothing.
Mm.
You know, they're not joining in. They're not thinking, well, hang on a second. They're watching, they're listening, they're working out whether they can do it or not do it, or can they watch and practice at home. So I think in the physical development field, it's very important to just let them breathe, let the whole situation breathe and see what emerges. And physical development is very strange because it's not very linear, you know, and progressions and regressions are equally important, and plateaus are very important. Your children plateau for ages and ages and ages, and then ping, something takes them to the next stage.
Mm.
So it requires a fair amount of, yeah, confidence and courage and sensitivity and real observation. You know, what is going on here? What is actually happening here? You know, how does this child feel about this today? And just, you know, it could be just leaving them another 10 minutes.
Yes.
You know, just to see what happens, see what they come up with.
But I think that we had a fairly, let's put it like a fairly flowery conversation recently about pedagogy and what's going on. But and this is very interesting. It's a bit this whole thing about enabling and growing. But what we would tended to agree with is that that requires really well-trained and
yes.
thoughtful and sensitive adults, no matter what their qualification, but actually somebody. And I did wonder, and I am going to check this now for my with my own colleagues at Leave, but how much training do people get about this?
Oh, it's ludicrous. I think it's only been in the last... maybe 3-4 years that it's been mandatory. It's been
right.
a mandatory part of
right.
early years training. Before that, it was optional. So we had
right.
generations of practitioners with really no idea.
No. Okay.
And I think on a 2-year undergraduate course, I think it's 7 hours in 2 years.
Given the importance of it in terms of children's learning, then it's pretty pitiful, really, isn't it?
It is pitiful, but you can understand, you know, it's very difficult to get quantitative data around physical development at this age. So
sure.
you can't just run tests and run them through a computer program and go, oh, yes, they've done this and they've done this. Whereas with literacy numeracy, you can do that.
Yes, that's
so
true.
The data collection is very difficult. You can't say... if they do so many hours a week, this will happen.
No.
Because you just don't know.
No.
So it's a difficult field to get quantitative data, and I think that's one of the reasons that it's been so difficult to get funding for initiatives in this field, because we can't say for sure that if they put that amount of money into this programme, this will happen. We just can't.
No, and we are kind of fixated with programmes, because
yes.
I think that kind of comes because of the confidence of staff, actually. I mean, it's a bit like getting them to sing. A lot of staff are a bit shy about singing, and I think it's the same with physical development.
Oh, definitely. And one of the major barriers to get practitioners to engage in this is their own fear.
Yes.
About... making fools of themselves, getting onto the floor, not being able to get up again, hurting themselves, the children hurting themselves, noise, losing control is a big one. So there's a lot of fear around this. And I've always said, there are lots of different roles in physical development. If you're not good at the practical and you don't like it, then don't do it, but find a role. Liaise with parents. Find resources, go and have a look around your local community and see what resources and things that are available. You know, get people in to come and do different things with the children. So there are lots of roles. You don't have to jump around in a tracksuit because that's never been, mandatory.
Do you not also think, though, and I'm sure some people now would be sort of throwing things at the computer when they hear me say this, but that there are sort of two other elements in this, isn't that? One is that we, I think, stepped too far into the outdoor play becoming the outdoor learning space, and actually, almost creating the classroom outdoors, and therefore, in a way, taking away the kind of significance of being outdoors, which is about space and about a different environment, and and letting children just in a way absorb all of that space, especially if they have the benefit of a big garden. And then the second thing is, as you probably know, I'm a great campaigner for men in childcare. Now, I'm not suggesting that because they're men, they're necessarily going to be better. Physically, but I do think the balance between the men and women gives a wider overview
yeah.
as to around risk, around expansion of activities, and perhaps a better conversation about what is physical. Because we do know that boys, particularly, do tend to learn a lot more using their bodies more effectively, and we do also accept, I think, generally, that we tend to create classrooms that are just much more around sitting and doing, creative art, writing, numeracy, all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I do think our little boys sometimes are a bit caught in that and get it sort of, sometimes it's the boys that are blamed, but actually it's not really the boys at all. It's the fact that we've got inappropriate teaching going on.
Yeah. So if we go back, what did you say the first thing was about the classroom outdoors? I think...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there is a real danger of, I mean, I've been to settings where I've been taken to their lovely outdoor setting, and I think, this is our maths corner,
yeah,
this
exactly.
is our literacy corner. I think, why are you doing this? You've got a lovely slope, you've got a little pond, just, you don't need anything. You don't need anything.
No.
You know, just use what you have. You know, you've got the sky, you've got your fence, you know, you've got lots of things, lots of possibilities here. In terms of men have a very different energy, and rather annoyingly, they don't have to do very much, and the children will, you know, do it with them.
Yeah.
So
is that what you found?
Oh, yeah.
Consistently?
Yeah, consistently. They have a different energy. They just... and they don't seem to have the body issues that sadly many practitioners do have.
Oh yeah, completely.
You know, they just are seem to be more comfortable in their, you know, whatever size, shape, or whatever they are.
Yeah.
They just are very okay in their
yeah.
in their skin, and children pick up on this. They pick up on the energy. They pick up on, you know, and. The men that I've watched just seem to like physically being with the children.
Right.
They just enjoy it.
Right.
So even if they're just sitting on the ground.
Right.
And somebody will jump on their backs, then they all... they're happy with that.
Right. Yes, and I know that there are some people who will be hissing at this point, but the truth is that that's what you see.
Absolutely.
We
consistently,
we
yes.
see it too. And we did some research with children, because, you know, as part of the men and childcare thing. And we asked the children, you know, they had to sort of identify a certain set of, well, as stereotypical activities as I possibly could get, you know, and who would they choose? And, you know, there was the sort of hypothesis was they were more likely to choose a man for this and a woman for that. Not at all. They chose the people that were the best
yes.
in class at this. And sometimes it was women doing the physical activity,
yeah, yeah.
and sometimes it was men, but it wasn't anything to do with gender, actually. It was everything to do with they're good at it, they make it fun, and we enjoy it. And so, yeah, that was really interesting for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes what happens is we don't watch enough to notice those things, you know, in the nursery, there's so many things to go on and there's so
yeah.
much
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
that sometimes we don't ourselves sit back and also have a bit of confidence in our own skills as professional early years teachers about making judgments about what we see. We get worried. Is it right? Do we know enough? You know, we're not a very confident sector. In our own kind of pedagogical perspectives, often.
Yeah, and I think that does prevent a lot of younger practitioners actually giving it a go.
Yes.
I mean, and certainly in physical development, I mean, a lot can go right, but a lot can just not work.
It won't matter, the children think
it's
hilarious.
It really doesn't
yeah.
matter, but
who's
you have
to
be prepared for that.
Yeah.
You can write a beautiful lesson plan, then it all goes pear-shaped. Well, that's what happens. And then you learn, and then you know.
So let's just talk for a minute about the early learning goals and the distress, actually, the review has caused to so many people. I think particularly because no one felt really engaged or really properly informed. And that may be right or wrong, but it's the perception that's powerful at the moment across the sector. I know you were quite upset about the physical goal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were bitterly disappointed. Mainly because the Ofsted education inspection framework had been so positive for us.
Right.
You know, they got in the two really important points, which was, you know, from birth onwards.
Yeah.
Which was massive. And then the idea that age is not the important factor in physical development, it's the stage of development.
Right.
Now, these are huge, huge. I mean, it may not seem much to other people, but these were massive.
Right.
And the revised early learning goals for physical development do not align at all in any way with the EIF.
Right.
So, and the major problem with the revision, well, not only are they poorly written, you know, the language is poor, they talk about play movement. I mean, I think they mean movement play, but who knows? They can't even get the terminology right.
Right.
But the main problem is that they've removed half of physical development the health and self-care, they've repositioned
yes.
under social emotional communication. So that has taken 50% of the field away.
Yeah.
Which means how on earth is it going to remain a prime area with only, you know, if it's reduced to gross motor and fine motor skills, how is it going to remain prime? We are not going to get any funding for something that is so narrow in scope.
Right.
It's very, very problematic, and it completely negates the whole thing for children, which is that physical skills are very linked to health and self-care. So continence, teeth brushing, or, you know, oral care, brushing your hair, I mean, any of these things.
They're physical tasks.
They're very, very physical tasks, and they are very, very linked.
And they're actually quite complicated when you start to break them into little tiny pieces, you know, when you yes. start doing those kind of elephant steps.
Yes, so, I mean, just at the point where we're in a massive health crisis, and children are going to bear the brunt of this, they do that.
So do you think that the developmental matters, which I know tends to be kind of interwoven in the early learning goals, but in fact is not, do you think they can mitigate this in any way, shape or form, if people choose? Because, of course, they're not compulsory.
They don't, but I think, I mean, the physical development goals are so not relevant to the field. I mean, they simply are not relevant. They, you know, 90%, 98% of children over the last, two or three years have gained an expected. Which means we're back to the whole, reducing it to gross and fine motor skills, we're back to the whole tick boxing exercise.
Okay.
Which 98%, so what incentive will practitioners have to take this field seriously? And it does not align with the very serious health problems that children are experiencing. So you've got the goals are saying, 98%, this is all brilliant. Let's just accept this and do nothing. And again, it doesn't align with the education inspection framework, because Ofsted have said, actually, we're not interested so much in the paperwork. So the head teacher can't just hand over a file and say, 98% got expected, yippee, you don't have to think about this. And so the inspector will say, right, you know, learning walks. You tell me, all, you know, from head to youngest practitioner, you tell me what's going on here with this child. What do you think, what are they doing physically? How could you progress this? How is that going to align with the goals?
And again, it's all about confidence, and I think there's a real fear that the early learning goals become a curriculum. And everyone says, no, they won't. But we know that development matters became a tick box, and that, you know, you were sort of tracking those children against them to make sure that they got to the next stage, whether it was relevant or not. And you made the point, I think, at least twice, if not three times, that physical development isn't necessarily about age.
No, it's about stage of development. So my issue with goals is they do not align. I don't think they're going to align with the new development matters, and they certainly don't align with the education inspection framework, which begs the question, what on earth is the point of them? I mean, how are they going to be used? What is the point?
Well, that's the worry, that they'll be simply used as a tick box exercise to get them through a baseline assessment, and that would be, you know, they either pass it or they don't. I mean, it all makes you feel, you know, you want to cry actually when you start thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they had a huge there was a huge possibility here of actually doing something for children's health.
Yeah,
you know, get something organised that would support Ofsted framework, support development matters, and they have absolutely failed.
No, and I think we're now going to be relying on bringing in a dance teacher or we used to have, do you remember the tape, Sticky Kids?
And
I'm not saying they're good or bad, I'm just simply saying that, you know, people will start relying on all of that sort of thing. And so the notion of learning through your physicality in every part of from the moment of arrival to the moment of going home is kind of completely lost. It's kind of like, it's 3 o'clock, we're going to do 15 minutes.
Yes.
of
and
dancing.
And this will fulfil something.
Yeah, and that will be fine. We'll be able to write it down. Or today we had the balls out. Yeah, to what end?
To what end?
Yeah. So if you have a magic wand, Lala,
yes.
What would you do? What would you do?
I think we have to actually probably not take too much notice of the early learning girls, particularly for physical development, because they're not going to help children's either learning through their bodies or their health. And I think we have to actually give practitioners the confidence and the underpinning knowledge. And I think, you know, the Open University course that I'm doing, which actually starts tomorrow, the online one, you know, that's free and it will give them a sort of baseline level of knowledge.
Yes, I think I've got some of my staff signed up for
that. Yeah, but everybody can do, so they can talk to each other and actually start a conversation about this.
So say a bit more about that course. And also, your book is really, really helpful because it's very... it's very thorough, actually, and it walks you through all these elements and unpacks it and explains it rather nicely. And it takes away, you know, go away from the pincer palmer grass thing into the much greater world of, Isadora Duncan and her floaty dresses and the likes. Yeah. But, so talk just a little bit more about your course with the Open University and who you're doing it with and how people can connect with it.
Oh.
And also a little bit about your book, because anyone out there who's interested in this may well want to read. And you also, I think you have a website or your Twitter?
Yeah. At Abatters.
Yeah,
yes.
Where you can get stuff, can't you?
Yes, Abatters is the website. They can.
Yeah, so tell people about that, though. Cause...
So the Open University course has been, you know, a long time coming. And actually, we were funded entirely by Public Health England. So actually, for early years to be taken that seriously has been fantastic.
Right.
So belying what the DfE have done,
yes,
Public Health England actually think we are worth it and important enough to fund the whole project.
Wouldn't it be great if we were collaborative?
Yes.
One day if DfE and Public Health England and the Department for Health were all in bed together, literally, and nobody fell out.
In our dreams.
Yeah.
So Public Health England funded this. So it's an 18-hour, six-module course. So there are 6 weeks, six different topics, which all at the end come together and will give them as a body of underpinning knowledge that linked firmly to practice.
And you get my apprentices on this.
And there's lots of time for them to discuss on the student forum and really address their own maybe prejudices, their own fears, their own hopes about this, and how much knowledge they have already, because most of them have more knowledge than they imagine.
Yes, I think that's always the case with people.
Yeah, they may not be from books or whatever, but actually they do have a lot of knowledge there that we can build on.
Yeah.
So the plan is, and it's free to access, is to build a national sort of cohort of people who have done the course and got the certificate, and that they will grow in their knowledge over time. But they'll be inspired to explore the field a bit more.
Right. So anyone currently who's a sort of pedagogical leader in a setting, it would be very sensible because they could coach and nurture the next generation of people.
Yes, and the course
and then they can run.
Yeah, and the course will adapt and react over time.
Yes, of course. You
know? I mean, at this point, it's quite movement based. It's quite because I wrote it.
Yes,
wrote the spec for it. But the team at the Open University were excellent. The tech team was superb. So hopefully.
Yeah, that's great. And your book kind of helps them. Is it useful?
The book sort of helps them.
So the two connect.
With the thinking around it.
And am I right in thinking that you've got another book coming out any minute now?
Oh, it's a fantastic 50 ways of being physical. Yeah. That comes out next month.
Oh, that's good. Because again, they're very nice little books and they're just, you know, when you're desperate to sort of have a look, it just opens up very simple ideas that... Sometimes I think for people just to reaffirm that what they're doing is okay.
And what they know.
Yeah.
So this one, the Early Years Movement Handbook is much more in depth and it looks at, you know, the principles of how and why. you do this.
He uses one of my my words that I can never say properly. Proprioception.
Proprioception.
Yeah, you see, I get it wrong every single time. I've tried that. I've tried it all
your
sorts of things.
Proprioceptive self.
Yes. Yeah. I don't seem to have one. I've only got a proprioceptive self. So that's a new neologism in the world of early years. So just to conclude then, what do you think? I mean, you know, what are your words of wisdom?
I think we have to actually get back to sort of community, but you know, work as a community with, so earlier settings, parents, teachers, you know, and the local community. What resources are there in the local community? What can we draw on? And as we discussed sort of previously, what works in one part of the country won't work in another.
No.
So whatever diktats come down from on high, you can't just assume they're going to work for everybody everywhere.
Okay.
So get back to extrapolating what works for you. You know, what do your children need? What do they like doing? You know, how can you progress them? You know, and have the courage to say, right, you know, 2 days a week, we're not going to have any chairs.
Okay.
You know, we're going to spend the whole of this day, you know, outside. Just have the courage of your convictions that actually this is important and really matters.
Yes, I remember not so long ago, one of the managers said to me, you know what we've just done? We've all laid on the grass for about half an hour and just listened to the wind in the trees.
But that's perfect.
And, you know, she said to me, when we did it first, it was just following the children's lead. It was just something that they'd done, then they all... She said, for a minute, I was thinking, oh, should we be doing something? And then she said to myself, oh, get a grip. This is real learning. This is, you know, this is wonderful. Relax. And so it's just getting people to the point where they can do that. And not
think, oh, my goodness, I've now got to write it all down.
Yeah.
And they must do a worksheet about wind and something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, leave the experience there, that actually in itself, it's enough, that it matters. As a little brilliant, perfect capsule. Yeah, that in itself, it's enough. And I think that's really important.
That's a great way to finish. Thank you very much for coming and talking to me, and good luck with your course.
Lovely, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today. If you like what you heard, please share it or check us out on our website, leaf.org.uk.